Our first reading from the Acts of the Apostles harkens back to a watershed moment. For up to that event and similar ones, non-Jews like Cornelius stood on the outside looking in. You see, the truest strands of Greek philosophy reasoned their way towards the one true God as they critiqued paganism with its many gods. Weren't the gods more or less projections of the human spirit? Some noble, some base, giving cover for basically any behavior whatsoever? And where did the gods come from anyhow? Where did the created world come from, which can't explain itself without reference to something uncreated, to something that isn't simply alive, but is life itself? And if we can reason, as we're doing now, doesn't that say something about our Creator and the way in which He created? With order, with design, with purpose? But philosophical considerations such as these don't generate worship. Thinking about the idea of what created you is one thing. The Creator speaking to you, revealing to you how to relate to Him, how to live well with other humans, drawing you into His family, well, that's quite another thing. So there the Gentiles sat, having learned from the Jews about the one God that their mind had reason to, but unable to get any closer. For physical descent determined full inclusion in God's chosen people. In other words, you had to be a Jew to be fully included. Unable to enter the temple, they were restricted to the outer court of the Gentiles. Now, this seems strange to us, doesn't it? I mean, it should be equality for all. Equal access to God, right? If that's not a right, then what the heck is? Well, that might be true for an idea like the American dream, but did you have a right to the person who became your spouse? You didn't propose to your spouse or weren't proposed to with the words, "You will marry me," but "Will you marry me?" God is not a thing or an idea any more than your spouse is. He offers invitations and has the right to establish the timing and criteria He sees fit, as we do with our own invitations. The change undergirding Cornelius and Peter's watershed moment was Jesus' fulfilling the whole of the law and commandments, so that keeping the law and commandments are now simplified to following Christ, to living as He lived, to doing what He did. Now's the time for the invitation going to everyone. I mean, that's what Peter meant when he said, "In truth, I see that God shows no partiality. Rather, in every nation, whoever fears Him and acts uprightly is acceptable to Him." And that's the meaning of the Holy Spirit falling upon the apostles who believed in Jesus. Following Him is the criteria for being part of His family. Now, what's so fascinating is how uninteresting all of this has become to modern man. I can even see it on faces here from time to time. You know, maybe it's just boring homilies, but think of it this way. The Greeks and the Jews were preoccupied with the meaning of life, with how to live a good life, with what is truth, goodness, beauty, honor, and love, with how to assure your life is in harmony with the one who is life itself. I am who am. When was the last time you had a conversation about the meaning of life with anyone? Have you ever had it with your children? When did you last discuss how we humans can perceive truth and know the good so our lives can mirror those qualities? I mean, maybe occasionally, like when there's illness or loss, that gets us thinking about things. But such considerations are far from our thoughts most of the time. And truth be told, the dominant worldview rejects that there's any meaning outside of the meaning we each create for life, for truth, for love. My truth and love is love are contemporary expressions of this worldview into which we have all been born and see vividly depicted on college campuses. But clearly, that wasn't how Jesus saw things. For Jesus, love is tied to his commandments, which he himself received from his Father. If you keep my commandments, you will remain in my love, just as I've kept my Father's commandments and remain in his love. There's the whole of the law and commandments, the keeping of which allows all humanity to be part of God's family. And there's how Jesus saw such things as love, which isn't something each person defines, but which already has a definition, a meaning rooted in God. God is love, St. John said. And this is love, not that we have loved God, but that he loved us. Love's meaning is given by the Creator and held out to us so that we can actually have love instead of something false and of our own fabrication. Which brings us back to JB2 and what we've been asked to do. And the other day, one of our campaign volunteers said that she had been asked by an atheist why our parish, and the whole Catholic Church for that matter, doesn't just give all its money to the poor instead of building a church. Wouldn't that be a better use of your money? Give it all to the poor. She said, it kind of makes sense. How would you reply, she asked me. Well, I mean, between us, I mean, we know all the envelopes in our packets that go to serve the poor and care for the poor. But I said, you know, first, I would ask if he's currently giving money to the poor or volunteering to alleviate their suffering. Is he sincere? For it's easier to criticize others than critically assess oneself. Next, I would ask if he's holding others to that same standard, such as our government and its spending on electric vehicles, for example. You know, Goldman Sachs estimates that the climate and energy subsidies in the Inflation Reduction Act will cost $1.2 trillion over 10 years. $1.2 trillion! That would go a long ways to fight hunger, wouldn't it? And that's just one bill. You see, poverty can't be solved by technology, legislation, and money alone. We have plenty of all three. Poverty can't be solved in that way because it's not a technocratic problem, but a spiritual, a moral one. Friends, look over there to the rendering of our church. I mean, look either now or later and see how small people are in comparison to what we'll build. It is drawn to scale. Look at what our church is saying. The truth of our existence, the content of love and the shape it takes, comes from above, from the transcendent God who has made himself known in Jesus Christ. Morality and meaning and every good thing comes from him and provides the guidance and inspiration needed to deal with spiritual problems and to be included in God's family. That's not a bad reason for us to give what we have to build what humanity so clearly needs.